One of the highlights each year at our annual meeting, at least for me personally and most of our members, is the following speaker to be here in person and present his information. Lynn Helms is here from the Department of Mineral Resources, and we're all very eager to hear what Lynn has to say about the prospect of what's happening in our state, and we all appreciate Lynn's time to be here in person and present information. So, and we all look forward to his introductory joke here. So welcome, Lynn.
Thank you so much. This is one of my favorite speaking engagements every year. It's one of the most gratifying that I do. I like to try come share what we see looking forward in terms of activity in your individual counties. And we're going to do things a little bit different this year. We usually, over the past 5 years or so, things have been pretty stable. High oil prices, relatively stable, and a lot of activity. So we made some longer-term projections. Those haven't really changed that much. But I want to look at some shorter-term projections and give you a variety of scenarios. Listening to Brent's thing, I realized how complicated this whole financial thing got during the legislative session. I had not heard the names of all the bills. Surge, formula, extraction tax, and bucket. And all those things were being juggled at one time. You probably wonder whether legislators such as Vicky are able to keep up with all that. But I have a little story to tell you that'll reassure you along that line. It was last fall, one of the local window companies was offering such a great sale on windows that Vicky just couldn't resist, and she had all new windows put in her house. About a week ago, Vicky got a call. It was the guy from the window company. He said, Vicky, I hate to make this call, but we put new windows in your house last fall, and we haven't heard from you since. And she goes, well, I'm a little confused. Didn't your ad say that those windows would pay for themselves in 1 year? Yes. Well, it's been 11 months. You should be hearing from them any day now. So that's kind of how it works, right, with the state. Just a quick snapshot of where we are at this point in time in terms of oil and gas activity. You can see the big map. It shows you the Bakken core area. We try to update this on a quarterly basis, so you can see the well productivity and also the mature area of the Bakken and Three Forks. And again, you begin to see how intense the development has become in some parts of the state. I think the good news up here is that we are just under 13,000 total wells producing in the state. We finally topped 10,000 wells producing from the Bakken and Three Forks. But what you see is that there are more wells in the bin or in the hopper coming than have been drilled. The timing of those wells is what's uncertain at this point. It's as Jim said, it's not the if, it's the when. Because what are they going to do with the 850 wells that have been drilled but not fracked? When are they going to spud the 2,000 wells that they have active permits for? And then what will happen with the other almost 11,000 wells that I've signed orders granting approval to permit additional wells in that category? I think if you look out, this gives you a picture of about 5 to 6 years out. You can see that the number of wells is going to more than double over 5 to 6 years. Now, when will that happen? Will it be a nice gradual increase? I don't think so. It's going to be an interesting next 2 or 3 years. We're in our 10th year of Bakken and Three Forks, and I don't think any of us know what the next 2 years actually looks like in terms of that. This certainly is the future, what we call harvest mode. It's multi-well pad drilling. What you're looking at here is a pad just north of northwest of Newtown on Highway 1804. It's just off the highway there. At the time this aerial photo was taken, six wells were producing. They were drilling 7 through 12, and the others were yet to come. I was on that pad about 3 weeks ago, and all 18 wells are there. You can see the red well heads. Those are wells that haven't been fracked yet. Those are NC wells. The rest have been fracked and are on production, and so there's 18 wells producing on that pad. That's going to be at the low end for that part of the country for ultimate oil and gas development. This is a map of the laterals coming out from that well pad, so you can see where the 18 well heads are located there. That well pad has laterals extending out across 4 square miles. That's a 13-acre pad, and it's producing from 4 square miles. Its footprint is 0.6% of the land. And that really is the future or the goal, ultimately, for development of the Bakken and Three Forks. As you look around the basin, it's not all going to be 18 wells. Some places, 6 or 7 wells out on the fringes. Some places in the center, far more. You can see this is Whiting's impression of what the core area looks like, and I think they've got 16 wells in the core area. But there were some experiments last summer, and so we're seeing now the first year's results from some of these increased density experiments. And what you see in the picture on the left-hand side is a place where they took the interwell distance down by half, and they are still not seeing interference between the wells. So with the hydraulic fracturing technology that they have developed, they're now looking in the core area, the area where Alan was talking about, the area in northeastern McKenzie County and northwestern Dunn County, the potential for 32 or more wells in a spacing unit. So in that area, again, the long-term future hasn't changed. It has, in fact, increased. But the short-term future is very, very different. Some of the things that have changed in terms of technology, we saw a 50% increase in the amount of water and sand going into a hydraulic fracturing job between 2011 and 2012. We saw another about 15% increase. I'm sorry, that was 12 to 13, 13 to 14. We're expecting that to continue to grow at that rate. Almost all of the companies have pretty much abandoned high-strength proppant. The clay potential that we were talking about is completely dead at these oil prices. Nobody is going to open a kaolinite mine and manufacture high-strength proppant in North Dakota at these oil prices. People have switched to very, very high sand loadings and what they call hybrid fracs, meaning most of the wellbore is fracked with slick water. They have optimized at somewhere between 35 and 45 stages, but they're now using 6 to 8 million gallons of water and 8 to 10 million pounds of sand in a typical frac job. So the volumes have gone up, and when I show you the numbers, that's one of the numbers that we're trying to generate so the folks that are working with WAS and with freshwater permits and that sort of thing have some idea what their activity and requirements ought to be. If you look at cases in front of the Industrial Commission, this has been a catch-up time for us. We're down to a backlog of only about 800 cases sitting on my desk, waiting to be signed. We're back to 2009-2010 levels. That was not a slow time, if you remember 9-10. It was slow compared to 12, but it wasn't really a slow time in North Dakota's oil business. Permitting has not dropped nearly as much. Permitting, we're at the 2011-2012 level. These indicate to me a couple of things. One is that oil companies are still looking long-term, 5 to 6 years out. Where do I want to be to drill wells? How many wells is it going to take to develop a spacing unit? What do I need to have in place in terms of orders so I can get the permits quickly? This says that oil companies want to be ready within the next year or two to mobilize rigs if the oil price justifies it. The oil price right now does not justify it, but they are maintaining an inventory of a couple thousand permits so that when things happen, they will happen quickly. That's kind of something a message I want to deliver, is when we hit these magical price points, things will move very quickly upward. I think the one inhibitor to that will be, can they get the employees to come back? Will the employees still be here? And that all depends on how long this downturn lasts. If we take a look at rig count versus oil price, what we see now is we're in harvest mode, so we're much more sensitive to oil price than we were, say, in 2012, when they had all that lease money out there at risk, and they had to mobilize the rigs no matter what the price did in order to secure those leases and HBP those leases. That is essentially over. And so we're now harvesting a commodity, and they've gotten so darn good at it that they're overproducing the commodity, and prices are very low. That red line is something new that I added. What I want you to see is that in 2011, the typical drilling rig could generate 0.7 wells per month. That's how many it could turn out. In 2015, that typical oil rig is generating 1.7 wells per month. Almost three times the number of wells can be drilled by one of these efficient drilling rigs today than in 2011. Are we going to see 218 rigs again? Something might be able to drive that, but that would be very, very unlikely because the rigs are three times as efficient as they were in 2011. So it would be very unlikely for us to more than double the rig count going forward. Very unlikely, and we're sitting at 73 rigs today. That is an interesting curve to see what industry has done in an attempt to cut costs and keep this play going. If you look at the typical well, you can see that the typical well has improved. It wasn't that long ago. We were talking about 1,000 barrel a day IP. The average North Dakota well now IPs for 1,400 barrels a day. And that number is going to grow as they focus in the northeastern McKenzie County area in northwestern Dunn County. The problem that industry has is they've been able to reduce well costs and operating costs about 26% combined. But oil price is down 51%. So that leaves them sitting on a 25% gap. They're still sitting on a 25% gap that has to be closed somehow. Does that get closed by reducing cost? Does it get closed by reducing activity? Does it get closed by an improvement in oil price? It may be all three. But you can see why we're sitting where we're sitting, because as much as they've been able to reduce well costs, it doesn't make up for the drop in oil price. This just shows you oil price and production. I saw the preliminary July numbers. They are essentially June numbers, plus or minus 1%. We'll be coming out with those on Monday. But in terms of flaring, daily production of oil, daily production of gas, wells completed, everything is just almost identical to what it was in June. No real change in the July activity. These are the projections going forward. The black line would be if we just closed up shop and you know, went to decline mode and stopped drilling anything except maintenance wells. The green line that you see there is the legislature's, the state government's revenue projection line, 1.1 million a day. The blue line is still where we believe production is headed. It's a matter of when, not if. We put some funny little notches in there just because we wanted people to not forget that every 5 to 7 years we have bad prices and things go down. And as the legislature was looking at the big trigger, we wanted them to think about the fact that this year would not be the last time that they'd be facing the big trigger. That the big trigger would come back and come back and come back as we went into the future, and that the big trigger would matter a lot more at 2 million barrels a day than it does at 1.2 million barrels a day. And so we wanted all those factors to go into their policy decisions. Let's switch a little bit to the world oil prices and commodity prices and what's driving this whole thing. One of the interesting things that's going to come out about a month from now, we had a Dukakis fellow out here studying. He's from Columbia University, and he's been looking at a lot of the aspects of finance in the Bakken. One of the things we wanted him to look at was, is the Bakken now the swing producer? Is Saudi Arabia no longer the swing producer? Is the Bakken the swing producer? So he pulled up some numbers and took a look at the cost to get a barrel of oil out of the Bakken by drilling and fracking and producing versus all the other plays, including offshore, deep water, and all of that. The interesting thing is, over on the far right-hand side of the graph, you have the oil sands and the Arctic. Those are the swing producer. You have all these other plays in the middle that are virtually identical. The Bakken is no more a swing producer than the Eagle Ford, than Deepwater Gulf, or any other North American technology. And then at the far left-hand side, you have onshore Middle East, which is Iraq. and Saudi Arabia. What you're looking at up here is gross domestic product growth. You can see that long stretch of $90 to $100 oil that we had that allowed the Bakken technology to develop to what it is today. Here you see the Bakken and the Eagle Ford really coming on in terms of production. And this is Saudi Arabia opening the taps. What you're seeing right now, this dip right here is the anticipation. I'm sorry, we're right in here. This dip right in here is the anticipation of Iraq bringing 700,000 barrels a day on and driving prices down and keeping them down. We don't reach a situation where we start to see oil price growth until mid-2016 at best, and all of this is dependent on the world's gross domestic product growing, which we're not seeing, are we? I think this is overly optimistic. I think when you look at those black lines, I don't see China's GDP growing. I don't see Europe's GDP growing or even the U.S. GDP growing to the extent that, they have these black marks here. So we may be in this low price environment for a significantly longer period of time than, what this graph indicates. And I think that squares with what Jim was telling you, you know, his gut feeling about where this thing is headed. But you can see that the current price dip that we're experiencing here is this anticipation of Iranian oil coming on the market and further oversupplying the market. What that does in today's environment is we've seen Brent crude prices drop by $50 a barrel on the world market, from $97 a barrel to $47.60 yesterday. Now, our problem with North American crude oil is that the storage tanks are full almost to overflowing. What you can see up here is that we have 90 million barrels more in surface storage in this country than normal. I don't know if this is the new normal. Maybe it is. The gray band that you see on this graph is a five-year average of how much oil is sitting in storage tanks in North America. And the blue line is where we are at today. We're 90 million barrels above that line. That is driving this price differential between Brent and WTI. And it's also driving this price differential, North Dakota Sweet at $14.50. below WTI. And so this is why you hear so much noise about crude oil exports, because crude oil export has the ability to eliminate this $3 and eliminate half of that $14.50 almost overnight by putting our crude oil on the playing field with Brent crude oil. It has that capacity. Why is that so important? Remember I talked to you about that 25% gap between what industry has been able to achieve in cost cutting and what oil prices have dropped? That almost completely erases that. Almost completely erases it. So we've seen in Congress now crude oil exports go from about 20% support to a coin flip, 50-50. It's a pretty encouraging sign that we may have the opportunity to eliminate this $3.50 gap and half of this gap right here. I put another line on here. This is the crude oil forecast from Moody's that the legislature used to calculate gross production tax revenue and also oil extraction tax revenue. This blue line is what the NYMEX futures strip says as of yesterday. It's 18% below that. It's $8 below that. Again, that's an $8 gap that could be closed by crude oil exports. So it's interesting how all that funding works out, and I'm glad that Brent has this calculated out, because in terms of oil extraction tax, we're collecting a lot more because the big trigger did not kick in. In terms of gross production tax, we've got to be collecting less. And how that all balances out to you as a county, you're going to need to go to Brent to get that dollar figure, but there's a positive and a negative there in terms of how that all works out. What I wanted to let you know was the NYMEX strip says we're going to be 18% below state revenue forecast in terms of oil price going forward. That's not a pretty picture. There's nothing pretty about that picture. If you look at what happened when we were sitting back here with 165 rigs running and they were. It was pretty much economic to drill everywhere in the Bakken. We had no idea what was going to happen to those rigs out on the fringe areas. There was some thought that they might move into the core area, and that rig count would manage to stay above 100. I think Jim knew better. Here's what actually happened. 65 of 73 rigs are in that core area. They were stacked. They're standing in a yard between here and Dickinson, most of those rigs, and another yard up at Williston. They're still in North Dakota. They haven't repurposed. They haven't left the state, but they're standing in a yard. And so 65 out of the 73 rigs are concentrated in this core area. The wells are incredibly productive. They're also high gas producers, and that causes a lot of infrastructure challenges. So infrastructure-wise, if you're driving from 13-mile corner to Crosby, you don't see a whole lot going on. But if you drive from Watford City to Newtown to Mandaree to Killdeer, you can't tell that anything's really changed. There's as much truck traffic as there ever was. So it's pretty challenging. This is the long-term forecast. Again, I think you see it's consistent with what Jim was talking about. We don't see rig counts really substantially recovering until 18-19. And job-wise, likewise, those transient jobs in the fracking and drilling industry are way down and will stay down. I think what we have to keep in mind, though, is those permanent multi-decade jobs continue to grow. They continue to complete 110 to 120 wells every month, and every one of those requires 2 to 2.5 multi-decade jobs to keep that well producing. That job number continues to grow, albeit at a slower rate, and ultimately ends up in the same place because the resource hasn't gone away. One of the things that has happened with multi-well pad drilling is truck traffic is way, way down, truck traffic per well. In 2012, it took 2,000 semi-loads to get a well through drilling and completion in its first year of production. That number is down to 1,230 at this point, even incorporating the larger frack jobs. And so if you're in the trucking business, that's not good news. But if you're in the road business, I guess, that, or road construction business, that's not good news. Road maintenance business, that is good news. The interesting thing is that's a 38% decrease in the number of truckloads to put a well on production, and so we've incorporated that into our predictions. Housing-wise, I really appreciate all the help from the Housing Finance Agency in coming up with these numbers and also Deb's work. Basically, the data shows that we've caught up in the hotel business. That we still need to build apartments at the current rate for a couple of years in order to catch up with the curve, and that in the single-family housing business, we still need to continue building at this rate for 4 years in order to catch up with the demand of those green jobs there, those long-term, multi-decade jobs. We are still behind in apartments. We're close to catching up in apartments and behind in the single-family homes. It will be a challenge to convince the legislature to continue to fund things that make this happen. It will be a challenge, but it's a challenge that has to be taken on. It's a fight that has to be fought. If we look at flaring, and we're going to look at counties here, we've got some challenges going on in the flaring business. You can see what happened due to the movement into the core area. We produce a lot more gas out of every new well than we used to, and so gas production has risen faster than oil production, and a couple of right-of-way projects didn't come through, both primarily due to the federal government, and so we've got 90 million cubic feet a day that's bottled up behind two right-of-ways that will not happen this year, that were expected to happen this year. So industry is going to be challenged to reach the January 1 goal, and they've already approached the Industrial Commission about trying to push that out for a construction season to see what we can do. The other thing that has happened is that these gas plants have fallen off the planning list because they're not economic anymore. And that means unless those become economic, we cannot get to 95% gas capture. I hope that corrects itself. I got a friend that works at a gas plant in Alberta. They are shipping their propane to Bushton, Kansas to get it in the market. The transportation costs are a nickel more than the value of the propane at the plant. They're paying people a nickel a gallon to haul propane away from the plant in Alberta so they can keep it running. At the plant right outside of Watford City here, I think they're netting about a nickel a gallon for propane. Do you remember 2 years ago when it was $5 and you couldn't get it? That's what's crazy about these times. The whole world has flipped. The whole coin has flipped. But we've got some real flaring challenges ahead of us in terms of meeting this with these right-of-way gaps and meeting this in the current economics. We also got some real challenges in front of us in terms of federal regulation. And I'm really happy that the legislature stepped out and set up a commission to take on anti-fossil fuel regulation from the federal government. What you can see up here coming out of the Department of Interior is this is U.S. Fish and Wildlife, the endangered species. We've got 6 currently listed, 4 threatened, 1 proposed, and 2 candidate species. So we're sitting on 10 on the endangered and threatened list that impact oil and gas and North Dakota agriculture. There are 3 more that they're trying to push forward. And so the strategy of this commission is threefold. Number one, when someone petitions U.S. Fish and Wildlife now to put a species on the endangered species list, they're going to fund getting good science. Because the law, Endangered Species Act, requires that you use whatever science is in place when it comes to the department or to U.S. Fish and Wildlife. So we need good science in order to avoid some of these species being listed. The second thing that they're going to do is litigate. They've got several $1 million in their fund to hire legal counsel to litigate some of these things. And then the third prong of that is to enhance habitat, to pay farmers and ranchers to improve habitat for endangered species so that you disperse them rather than concentrate them into one area and keep them on the list forever. And so that's a fund that was set up. We've been very successful in the litigation category. I left one off of here, and I was just reading about it this morning, so it should be 4 under the EPA, because there's a group of environmental organizations that have filed a petition to sue EPA over the RCRA, or Toxic Substances Control Act, and we're going to have to engage in that so they don't do a sue and settle. So you've got 7 actions going on here. I've been to 2 courtrooms, 2 federal courtrooms, 1 in Casper and 1 in Fargo, and we got a stay and an injunction. And so far we're 2-0. I hope we can keep up that kind of record. We stopped the BLM Hydraulic Fracturing Act, and we stopped WOTUS in the state of North Dakota. And that was the strategy behind that funding that the legislature put in there, is to fund the hiring of good attorneys to take these lawsuits to the federal courts and to allow folks like me and Todd Sando from the Water Commission to testify at those court hearings and show that there's real and irreparable harm to the state of North Dakota. Just quickly, one of the big bills that touched us was 1358. It has a lot of impacts, and I want to talk about some of those. New pipeline regulations are coming. And those pipeline regulations will depend on the study that EERC is doing right now on spills and on pipelines. That's going to be our focus for rulemaking. This next series of rulemaking is pipelines and spill containment, spill prevention. There are too many spills, and so we really need to focus on that, but we need to look at effective, achievable rules. And so that's what will be coming out of that study. Also, several things on surface owners being able to share pipeline information under their lands, and then studies on reclamation and pipeline technology. And now there is the opportunity. Let's see. This is the current pipeline rule. It's pretty bare bones. All right. And so we've only had 5 requests for location information. We've had no pipeline incidents reported to the division. The legislature did set up this ombudsman program to have people in your local communities help you with pipeline reclamation through the Ag Department. And we are hiring pipeline inspectors to get ready to implement these new rules. This is the study that is funded through EERC, and here is what they're supposed to focus on. I won't spend a lot of time on that. There's also a $500,000 study on reclamation of salted lands that was awarded to EERC. NDSU had a really good alternate proposal, and I think we're going to find an alternate funding mechanism to fund some of their ideas as well. And then the final piece is surface owner review of TA's status. So every 7 years, a surface owner can insist on a hearing to see if a well should remain on TA status, and confidentiality on spill reports and saltwater disposal wells. We got to gas capture. There was one other thing I wanted to mention out of that legislation, and I'm not sure that it's up there. We got approval to use the abandoned well plugging and site restoration fund to clean up legacy sites, pre-1983 sites. We have six on the list, stretching all the way from Killdeer to up by Blacktail Dam. And we've got environmental consultants on those sites this week prioritizing those. So we can spend up to $1.5 million per biennium on going back and cleaning those up. If you are aware of those sites in your county or on your land or on your neighbor's land, let Cody Vandenbosch know. We will put them on the list. We will have somebody visit the site, evaluate the environmental situation, and they will get prioritized and eventually get cleaned up. We can spend $1.5 million per biennium. Gas capture, as I said, in June we were at 82%. I think we're at 81% in July. It's going to be a stretch. The next goal is 85% in January, and industry is asking for some relief on that. And we're considering maybe a 10-month extension of that. And, of course, this goal is challenged by commodity prices at this point in time. Oil conditioning was put into effect. We have seen an impact from that. We have evaluated the liquids coming into the gas plants, and we've seen, on an average, 4,700 barrels a day of propane, butane, and pentane that's going into the gas stream that used to be in the crude oil, around 4,700 barrels a day. So we are seeing some shrinkage on the crude oil side. We're seeing more volume on the gas side, but we are removing some of those most volatile components from the crude oil. Okay, this is always my favorite part, but I got to get you to lunch, so I'm not going to belabor this. I think we looked at six different oil price scenarios, and we looked at it county by county. This one is based on the legislature's revenue projection that came from Moody's through OMB, was adopted by the legislature. And it shows you county by county who is above break even and who is below break even in terms of current oil price. The other thing that I want you to get from this is your current well count and the recent rig count. I think that's as of a week ago. This is the current well count. Some concern, and this is the non-completed wells, some people are concerned, are we going to over-drill the core areas, and you know, is there enough drilling locations left in those core areas for this concentration of rigs? Absolutely. Absolutely. We are not going to over-drill any of the core area if we continue like this for 2 to 3 years. That should not be a concern. This is going to be hard to read, but like I said, we put together six of these. The reason was, we wanted you to be able to look at what can I anticipate for activity in my county if oil stays at the revenue projection. What if it drops $10? So we did 20 to 30, 30 to 40, 40 to 50, 50 to 60, 60 to 70, 70 to 80, and 80 plus. At 80 plus, everything's economic, and you flip the switch, and everything turns back on. So I'll just walk through one of these. Some of these are really important numbers for road planners and water planners and everybody to work on as they look forward. So this is based on the legislative revenue forecast, 2015, 2016, 2017. You can see rigs currently sitting at 75, anticipated to go down to 60 next year if this oil price holds. and then recover back to 75 perhaps in 17 if this oil price holds. You can see county by county the daily production numbers. You can see that statewide we go from 1.21 down to 1.15 down to 1.1 million barrels of oil a day. Not that much impact statewide, but some counties gain, like McKenzie County, going from, am I at the right one? This is hard to see. 437,000 barrels a day, 433, 420. Some counties gain and some actually lose some production under that scenario. The other thing that we wanted you to have some idea about was how many frac crews might be working in your state. So you can see 51 to 50 to 62. How many non-completed wells? So we're sitting at 850 right now. At this oil price, that's the tool that companies plan to use to manage cash flow. They plan to cut drilling rigs and complete non-completed wells. They can do that for half the cost of drilling and completing a new well. And so that is the tool that they plan to use. So we've tried to show you what happens to the non-completed wells and the production as you move forward. The other thing that we put in here is water demand in terms of what's going to happen as these large frac jobs go forward, and in terms of WAZ demand and demand for fresh water out there in the oil patch. And you can see that even under this very flat oil price scenario, water goes from 7.4 million gallons a day next year to 11.5 million gallons a day in 17, just because they're all moving to these hybrid fracs and these high volume fracs. So you can see a couple of other scenarios. Let's look at this one, because this is the price where we are today. We're at this price, $8 below those revenue projections. So what does that look like? Well, that shows us going from 1.2 million to 1.1 million to a million barrels a day, and from 75 rigs to 55 rigs to 50 rigs. If today's oil prices hold through 2017, we end up down at 50 rigs. We end up with them not completing wells. They maintain the same number of non-completed wells. They keep drilling, but there's no incentive to frack wells unless you need to pay your banker or maintain cash flow. And so they end up not completing wells, and that translates into lower water demand than the revenue forecast. And so each one of these looks a little bit different because there's a higher and a lower oil price. Obviously, if you go to the really bad news one, which would be $20 to $30 oil, we're back to 30 drilling rigs in the state by 2017 at $20 to $30 oil and very, very low activity. And really, you know, just maintaining that number of non-completed wells. This young fellow that looked at oil prices and did this study that's coming out in September and October, he said, based on his analysis and the folks he's talked to, there's an equal probability of $20 oil and $100 oil. Well, that helps a lot, doesn't it? So nobody anticipates either one of those going forward. He was paid way too much, wasn't he? Well, he was working on a fellowship, so anyway. And this is at $80 oil, things really kind of start cranking again pretty well right away if oil goes to $80. So again, I know that's a lot of numbers. We are going to provide this PowerPoint to the organization so that as a county, you can take that chart. And whatever oil price is your favorite oil price, or whatever, look at the NYMEX strip and see what the oil price is doing, and you will have some idea then about how many truckloads are going to be hauled in your county, how many rigs will be working in your county, how many frac crews will be working in your county, what the water demand will be, and be able to look at that. And I think I may have failed to mention that, but semi-loads was another thing based on that 1,230 number. We anticipated county by county the number of semi-loads that would be moving across your county road infrastructure based on those various oil prices. I wish I could tell you. I'm hoping over lunch hour that Dr. Lauren Scott will tell us what the oil price is going to be, but I doubt it. I wish I could tell you. So rather than try to make long-term projections or projections based on a given oil price for you this year, we wanted to give you a variety of scenarios so that you could watch the NYMEX strip and have an idea what the next few months have in store within your county. And so you have a chart for each one of those oil price ranges for your county that tries to lay out for you the number of rigs, the number of semi-loads, the active wells that will be there, frac crews, non-completed wells, water demand, and production. From that, you should be able to make a reasonable estimate of tax revenue and infrastructure demands. It is going to be difficult to get the state to continue fund infrastructure improvements, but just like we're whittling away at that 1,200 Industrial Commission orders that were sitting on my desk and we got them down to 800, you have to keep whittling away at the infrastructure so that when this comes back, because it's a when, not an if, we can be ahead of the curve instead of trying to chase the curve so hard. I saved 2 minutes for questions, but we'll take as many as you have. Yes. We have, in fact, and we are in a, where is that rascal? There it is. We are in a process right now where we force production restrictions to bring a company within that goal. And so we'll be issuing letters again next week. I think there are about 7 companies that we require to restrict production in order to come in under the goal. When we met with the flaring task force from industry, they told us that over the period of time since October 1, when we put that rule in place, they have self-restricted 1.1 million barrels of oil, or about 4,000 barrels a day in order to meet the flaring goal. So that is how we get to the goal, is actually restricting production on wells. And in particular, we look forward and say, drilling wells and non-completed wells, we try to discourage bringing those wells on if the infrastructure capacity is not there to capture the gas. Anyone else? Yes. Is there still a timeline within which wells have to be completed? There is, under state law, a 1-year grace period. They have to produce crude oil or natural gas in paying quantities within a year of reaching TD. And that's why we're monitoring these NC wells to keep track of the number. We know month by month how many wells are in each county and each company that are in that NC status. They can apply for a 1-year extension of that. They have to get temporary abandonment approval. That's not really costly, probably cost them $50,000 to TA that well. They have to get state approval. Right now, and I'm anxious to hear from you, right now the commission is leaning towards granting that 1-year extension so that we don't put more crude oil on an already oversaturated market. As things change, if we see oil prices improve, then I think the commission will be much stricter about granting that 1-year extension. But we're always keeping in mind that there are royalty owners who get paid out of that production, and there are non-operated working interest owners who are being buried in debt for drilling those wells and are not seeing any cash flow. So that's a tough balancing act. Right now, at these commodity prices, we're leaning a little bit towards granting that 1-year extension, but not leaning hard in that direction. So it's a hard 2 years, and by law, they get 1 year. We can't force them to complete it in less than 1 year. Yeah, the question was, what are the chances of our technology being exported and actually putting additional oil on the market and additional pressure? And I think they're like 100%. Argentina has an oil shale play going, or a shale oil play. I always get those two mixed up. And what we have developed here has generated the Eagle Ford and the Permian Basin. which extends into Mexico. There is great potential for a shale oil play in Mexico. So, yeah, the technology is out there, and other countries are liable to bring it on. We are probably in a long-term lower oil price environment. Industry needs to figure out how to produce the entire Bakken at $80, not $100. And quite honestly, if they could figure out how to do it at $50 to $60, we would be better off. And that's what they're working on. But yeah, the genie is out of the bottle. And oil companies have taken this stuff around the world, the technology that we developed right here, to compete with us. It's no surprise. Well, thanks for your time. Go ahead. I'm going to tell one story about Brent, because I always like to begin and end with a story. So when Brent was in college, he was kind of in the dating game, you know, and some friends told him that he should try dating nerdy girls. Okay, so he found him a chemistry major, and he took her out on a date. And he was really finding it difficult to find things to talk about with a chemistry major. And so they're visiting there, and she looks at Brent, and she goes, "So what's your favorite element?" And as you can tell, this relationship doesn't last very long, because Brent kicked the bar stool out from under her and said, "And the element of surprise." Short relationship. Thank you for your time.